Accession number 26978, Reel 5.
Days later, so it had been the enemy were well inshore, I think, by that time. I heard afterwards that Utah Beach was the worst of the two, or the more there were more obstacles, where Omaha, in the first few days of the landing, the first wave were not on target. They were off target there, and they sort of landed somewhere along the beaches, which wasn't defended quite so well as the Utah Beach. I suppose really when I got over there, the fighting had finished on the beach line, and the forces had managed to get further inshore. But the atmosphere was still there. There was stuff lying about on the beach, which going across, talking about that, I was responsible for the navigation of the craft, keeping to the lanes which had been cleared of mines. And as we were going across, there were bodies floating in the water. Their stomachs were sort of extended because of the gases in their body. And out of courtesy, my skipper sort of said, "Well, let's sink that body, because it was terrible, really." I suppose we must have seen about 10 or 11 of these bodies floating by.
Was that the first time you'd seen a dead body?
Yes, yeah.
It must have been a shocking experience.
Yes, and the way we disposed of it, to, you know, let it sink to the bottom of the sea. It was a terrible thing, really. I felt very sad about it. But those sort of things, I suppose, you have to take as part of your duty, really. The on the beaches, I did manage to get ashore on one occasion. We were asked to bring ashore a jeep, because the one that the commanding officer of the unit apparently found that it wouldn't go, so he hadn't got any repair items, so we had to ferry this other one across. And with a couple of members of the crew, we took it ashore, which was quite a nice little village there, really. Mind it had been plastered with shells and so on, but I thought, what a beautiful countryside this must have been. And you get a different sort of aspect when you're on land rather than seeing it from the shore.
Was there much evidence of the fighting around the village?
No, well, yes, there was, actually. There was a lot of holes where they'd fired shells and there's that sort of thing, which we had to avoid in this jeep, take it to the headquarters of the, and they carried us back to the shore to put us back on the ship, on the craft.
Did you talk to any of the Americans who'd been involved in the fighting?
No, not no, I didn't really. I saw them before they landed there, you know, and most peculiar people to become used to, I think. they were apparently handed a little booklet which says how to keep the friendship going between our two countries, you know, and what they mustn't do and what they must do and so on. And I found them a little bit loud, really. Always sort of shouting out. And another thing that I disliked most intensely was the way they treated the Negro type of soldier. I felt there was a tremendous difference in the way they were treated and the way the white Americans treated.
Did you transport both then? They were transporting Negro American soldiers?
Yes, we had on two occasions we had the Negro types. Mind you, they were only the squaddies, they weren't very high up in rank or anything.
Did you talk to them much? How did they feel?
Yes. Well, they felt they were just doing a job, and they, I think they took it, you know, all the sort of ill feeling in a way. They took it very well, I found. I mean, they were drivers of vehicles and that sort of thing, and as long as they were doing their job, they felt okay, you know.
Did they have their own officers and NCOs, or did they?
No, well, as far as I know, these were all part of the American forces themselves. You know, they were sort of under command of the white American. And so, really, they were the only two things that, you know, rather sort of upset me in a way.
And did you feel when you were off the beaches that there was still was there a risk of air attack, or was there any threat to the beaches at that stage?
Yes, there were still threats of air attacks, and fortunately we managed to get back without any trouble. So I think we did three or four trips over, I think.
And were you at action stations when you were in the invasion area still?
Oh yes, yes. Yeah, because I was on the bridge with the CO. He and I were on the bridge most of the time. When I joined another land aircraft, we used to do 2 hours on the bridge and 2 hours below. But with this lot, we used to go straight across. Both of us be up there on duty. Because you never know what was going to happen any time. So at action station standby all the time.
What was it like below decks in the landing craft? Can't have been a lot of room.
Not a lot of room, no. There was a mess deck for the crew. They slept down there, they ate down there. There's not a lot of room, but there was sufficient room to have a crew, I suppose. The crew on that landing craft was 12 strong. On the other landing craft, as I tell you about later, I was 15 strong there. And quite a nice crew. They were very good. But I always thought, you know, I was 20 at the time, and well, I was 19 at that time, because I wasn't 20 till August. And for men who were in fact a lot older than I was to take orders from me and to carry them out without any question, to me that was a marvellous sort of comradeship in a way, because they didn't play up, they didn't sort of do anything out of the ordinary, and I felt good.
Was it hard to get used to that after being in the lower deck yourself?
No, I think when I was in the under the training course, I think you seemed to get that sort of feel that you were a little bit above the seamen, you know, that you'll be telling them what to do, not the chief petty officers on the course telling you what to do, how to do this. It was one of those things. I felt you've got to be prepared to take a lot of rough, because you never know how people are going to react. If you give them a command, and you expect it to be carried out, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it will be.
And did they know that you'd done your time on the lower deck? And did it?
Oh yes, yes. It made an awful lot of difference, especially the crew of the other landing craft I was on. I found them very, very active towards whatever had to be done on board, and they didn't mind sort of taking on rough duties or anything like that. They were extremely good crew. So, you know, on the whole, I found that the reaction was quite good. I felt at ease, you know, being a sub-lieutenant at the time.
What did it feel like the first time you arrived off Normandy and you saw this, the sheer volume of ships and men?
Well, I didn't really feel that we were the only ones there. That was a good feeling. At least we knew others were sort of taking the rough as well as we were, and it was not a bad feeling, really. I'd heard a lot about what had gone on before, about the craft being sunk and that sort of thing, and I was a little bit apprehensive in a way, feeling that perhaps this might happen to us, you know, they'd get a replacement sub-lieutenant to take over my job. It was so much different, especially as I'd only just sort of been made a commissioned officer, and I felt I've got to feel my legs, you know, before I do anything else, and be put straight into a landing craft, you know, which was such a tiny craft in comparison with the destroyer and the cruiser I'd been on. I didn't really know how the craft would react. I was given a bit of training before I left England, but I wasn't certain whether I'd had enough training to know what I was doing. You know, you've got to sort of know how it reacts to wind and tide and that sort of thing, which I hadn't had the experience of before.
They're flat-bottomed, aren't they, Nandy?
Flat-bottomed and a very heavy door, 14-ton door on the front. So you buffeted the sea. You didn't glide through it. You just hit it, and it sort of came as a bit of a whack, really, back onto the sea. So something you have to get used to, really.
But your seasickness didn't come back?
No. Fortunately, I didn't have it on the Belfast. So, yeah, I must have got my sea legs by then. But the... yes, after I'd finished with Normandy landings, I picked up an LCT. I was sent out to... Actually, we were going to India. I didn't realise that, but sent out to the Middle East. I picked up a landing craft from Sicily. We went through the Suez Canal to Port Tewfik. There we sort of loaded up our stores and water. Then we went across to Aden, which in my opinion was the hottest place on earth. It was dreadful. We had to be very careful on going up onto the upper deck, which was a steel deck. Especially, you didn't have to wear rubber-soled shoes, because otherwise it would have melted. It was that hot, you know. In fact, one of my crew said, "I'll cook you breakfast." He says, "I'll fry you an egg on the deck." But unfortunately, we hadn't got any eggs, so we couldn't do that. But it was from there we were attached to a merchant ship from Port Chufik. We had this merchant ship. We were attached by wire hawsers, which are very heavy, from the stern of the merchant ship to the forward bollards of our craft. And we were towed across the Indian Ocean. We hadn't got very far when it was realised that we didn't use our own engines. We had to be towed. And with the weight of the hawser pulling down on the craft, each time we hit a wave, of course, it just crashed. And the spray came straight over the top into the well deck. Fortunately, we got good pumps which are working to drain off the water. But strangely late, one morning we were going across and spray was coming over the door, and in the spray were flying fish. So we had hordes of flying fish in the well deck, which, although they were little fish, were so full of bones that we didn't sort of cook them or eat them, because we found there were too many bones in it. But it was an experience, really.
How long did it take to cross the Indian?
It took 10 days, very slow speed. I found out afterwards that the idea of this was that we were going to be an experimental craft. There was another craft attached to this merchant ship, which was a craft constructed of rivets, whereas we were welded. And they were thinking that they might find this a good way to tow a number of LCTs, one behind the other, for long distances, because of fuel conservation on the landing craft. Otherwise they wouldn't have made it to the other end, you know. And then we found, not only was that an experimental journey to see whether merchant ship could tow us, but also to see which of us broke up first, whether it was the riveted craft or the welded craft. Unfortunately, our welds cracked, and we split almost right across the middle of the craft. Fortunately, I had tank straps or strops on board, which I shackled to the well deck, because we had bolts in the deck to secure them to the various bollards at the fore and aft, in order to hold the thing together. It was a bit frightening, really, because there was a hell of a lot of creaking. And fortunately, the oil storage was a little bit further aft than forward, and the tank, because these were just made up of tanks welded together, square tanks, and in one we used to keep the oil, fiddling items in another, and so on and so forth. You know, we sort of made use of these tanks with little hatchways into them. And so I was fortunate in a way that nothing was lost. But it was, as I say, frightening, really.
Were you the commanding officer of this landing craft by now?
No, I was first lieutenant again. They got an older officer as a commanding officer.
Did you have to do a report on this?
Oh yeah, this, well, when I got to India, when we got to Bombay, we were put into the dockyard there, the dry dock, for repairs. But whilst we were out in the harbour waiting to be taken to the dry dock, Commander Major Landingcraft appeared in his sailing dinghy alongside. He said he was coming aboard, so we had to put down the gangplank. He didn't come alongside that side, he came alongside on the other side. And he immediately got over the wire stanchions that we had around the craft to prevent people falling overboard. But he didn't know, but during the journey, we had greased all these to stop them from rusting. He gets over with his white uniform on, his shorts, and the first thing that happened, of course, as he put his leg over the wire, his shorts got filled with greasy, dirty marks. He came on board, and I hadn't got my cap on. I was doing something else on board, and he says he had a petty officer with him, and he said to him, "Who's that man?" So he said, "That's the first lieutenant, sir." "Oh, why is he improperly dressed?" So he gave me an awful dressing down, really, for being improperly dressed. I thought, well, good gracious me, if this man's going to be in charge of me whilst I'm out here, I shan't find it very pleasant. Anyway, he came on board. He had a drink in the wardroom, and he went back to his little sailing dinghy. I felt like giving him a flea in the ear, but I thought I'd better not. But he was an amazing character. I never saw him after that. And I don't think he had many landing craft to look after at that particular stage. And then we were repaired in the dockyard of Bombay. The workers came aboard. Some of them were lazy gits. They used to sit on the deck and lounge up against the deck superstructure. And the our cabins, the CO's cabin and my cabin, were just down below the upper deck. And the these chaps used to sit there and eat their, chew their beetle juice, and spit that out on the deck, you know. This sent my commanding officer absolutely crazy. He came out and he'd kick them and sort of say, "Wash that up, get rid of it." And whilst we were in there, he made enemies of the workers there, because he was so, you know, sort of unkind to them, that I was given the tip by the foreman of the workers who spoke English, and he was a tremendous bloke, really. He could control these chaps with no end of severity, really, and they reacted to his methods. But he gave me a warning one day. He said, "Don't let your CO go ashore," he said. I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, they'll be waiting for him when he comes back." So I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you better put an escort on duty on the shore, because," he said, "they don't like the attitude of your commanding officer." So of course I told our quartermaster to get ashore with a